Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. With me behind the glass is Matt Neely, keeping me on time and on target every day.
Morning, Ted.
At least every Tuesday for me. And we are the Civic Engagement Hour. I don't know if we've actually worked the name out completely, what we want to call it, but our purpose is to try to introduce our listeners to folks who are engaged and involved in the community and encourage you to also get engaged and involved in the community. And today we've got a big show of two folks who are very, very involved and willing to step up and try to make their community a better place. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have Vail School Board member Chris King, who's a candidate. He's announced candidacy for State Senate in LD-17, and he'll join us and tell us why he's made that decision. And then the top of the hour, I feel very honored to be able to start the celebrations for Bill Buckmaster's incredible career in radio and TV and over three decades here in Tucson.
37 here in Tucson and a lot more outside of Tucson. California, Nevada, Hall of Fame broadcaster in two states.
Absolutely. You Arizona, think about that Nevada. One. Hall yeah. of Fame broadcaster in two states.
Yeah.
That's just some amazing yeah. things. And Bill's been such a big part of the KVOI lineup. Hold down the all-important lunch drive time hour from 12 to 11 or 12 to 1 with the Buckmaster Show for 15 years now. So it's going to be great to have Bill in the studio, have him on the other side of the microphone with me, and we'll talk about his memories, his future, and as you said in the intro, a little bit about what he sees that's happened and gone on in this community, how they can make it better. But I think we'd be remiss, Matt, if we don't do our usual Tuesday morning U of A sports talk.
Oh, my goodness.
Because things have been on a roll.
Yeah.
And I just get a sense if we skip a Tuesday, we could be setting things up.
Okay. So you're saying we've got something to do with the momentum? Is that where we're
I'm
going
I'm not
with
saying
this?
We're taking claim for it, but the Morning Voice, having a little bit of sports involved on Tuesday mornings.
Yeah, I like that.
Has made a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, we had about 12, 14 people over at our house Friday night to watch the University of Arizona go into Tempe and win the Territorial Cup.
Yeah.
So I don't know where you were watching or what you saw. I don't think you made the drive up to Tempe, did you?
I was watching in the East Valley.
There you go.
I was watching not very far away from Tempe. So.
Oh, yeah. Were you really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So
you were up in the region.
With family. One of whom is an ASU grad school graduate, has a law school graduate degree, an LLM degree. So one of them was an ASU alum, and he was a good sport about the whole thing. So.
I was going to ask, was he a big ASU Sun Devil talker, or what? Or did he just?
You know, he just quietly observed the game. He didn't really, there was no trash talking between us.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting game. It was one of those games that sometimes just makes you nervous because the offense was moving the ball up and down the field. Defense was doing an outstanding job stopping ASU, but we weren't putting a lot of points on the board.
Right.
And it was just
the first quarter was U of A, and then the second quarter you sensed ASU grabbing the momentum and they scored and fortunately the Cats were able to get some points on the board before halftime. But ASU seemed to have good momentum going into halftime, but they were leading 7-3, I believe. I think U of A missed a field goal early on, and were also turned away with a fumble right at the goal line too.
Right. But yeah, moving the ball, just not getting.
They just couldn't cash it in. Right. So but then I mean, five turnovers by the Sun Devils, just an incredible interception. Right.
That interception by Stooks was just. That was so incredibly athletic, and you. I don't know if you heard him talk about it afterwards. He just said he saw the opportunity, thought he could jump higher and go over. And uh-huh. I mean, he literally reached over the helmet, took the ball like, "Hey, you see this ball?
Yeah,
I'm taking it."
It's true.
And the defense has done this all year. The defense has been scrappy. They sometimes bend, but they haven't break, and they play with passion. They're chased. They're nonstop engines, and I tell you, I think it's paid off with Coach Brennan's changes with the coordinators.
Yes, I believe the coordinators have
9-3,
big changes. Who would have seen that coming?
9-3.
Anyway, yeah, four net turnovers, I think, because the Cats had one fumble. But by the end of the game, it was just the Cats were running away with it. And, they had Leavitt. ASU didn't have their starting quarterback. Leavitt was out. And I think they had a couple of injuries. You play the hand you're dealt in football, and sometimes, and on either side, there are injuries.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just think
there's no doubt.
The Cats just really took it to them. And, bragging rights for a year in Tucson, right? Or by Wildcats fans.
I don't know if you saw Coach Dillingham, the ASU coach's press conference afterwards.
Yeah.
He just said, listen, this sucks. He goes, for a year, that's what everybody's going to talk about up here. The people don't understand the passion of this game. You know, I know Grant Kruger on his show last week was saying, hey, it's time to get it back because we've seen the sign, 70-3, the no pity for the kitty. You see all that. And,
right.
And Grant organized a road sign also, so the people coming down to Tucson had to read about it when we took
coming
the cup
out of Sky
back.
Harbor. That was great.
It is always good to have the territorial cup, and we've got it for at least another year. But I think we got the potential for a couple more years. I think the team's got something going, and I think they proved it this year.
So everybody in Tucson again, 9-3, completely unexpected season. Nobody in there. If you said, "Oh yeah, I think they'll go 9-3," any sports pundit, anybody who closely follows writers, commentators on the radio, anybody would say, "Oh, you're nuts. You're just a homer, right?" Well, here we are, 9-3, and they got a bowl game. So but for a regular season, 9-3 is remarkable. Okay, and
especially when Vegas thought you were going to win 4.5.
Was that what the line was?
The over under was 4.5.
But,
before the season started.
You know, the big worry that I have, and I guess nobody said it on the air, so I'm going to be the first one to
breaking news on the Morning Voice.
No, but I'm the first person to speculate. I think everybody's probably waiting a couple weeks or until after the bowl game. But, I mean, you got to know they're going to come knocking for our offensive and defensive coordinators.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, people are going to be waving all sorts of money at those guys.
Yeah.
So enjoy it while it lasts, folks. And I guess next year we'll see what sort of rebuilding has to be done. Hopefully none. Hopefully it's just the cycle of recruiting more great players. And here's where Rich Rodriguez really cooked his own goose, so to speak. After the 2014 season, when they went to the Fiesta Bowl and didn't do so hot, but it was a good season. It was a really good season.
It was a great season.
And they went to a
painful game.
A major bowl game. They went to the Fiesta Bowl, for gosh sakes. But he didn't recruit off of it, and that was his downfall. So, if Brennan can recruit off of this team and show him what this group of guys, and I love how Brennan said, this is for the guys that chose to stay. Right. When things weren't looking so hot and they stayed.
He did an incredible job last week of highlighting those, and Stukes being one of them. I think he was around since 2020 that they made the decision, and he highlighted every single one of those seniors, made sure they were knows that, and ensured the team knew that it was the players we're playing for, the folks who committed to us and stayed with us through it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. We've got one more game.
Yeah.
One more game. The rumors, point towards the Holiday Bowl. We don't know yet.
So the ones, you've heard Sun Bowl thrown around, Holiday Bowl, yep. Alamo Bowl maybe. So those are the three that I keep hearing. We'll see what leads to. But, yeah, what an unexpected surprise to have a 9-3 season. Winning on a five-game winning streak. Going out on the regular season on a five-game winning
incredible.
Streak. And two of the losses, by the way, Those were 50-50s, man.
22nd in the nation right now.
Yeah, BYU could have gone either way. Had they gone for a field goal earlier in the BYU game, and we might have been talking, 10-2. So, and the Houston game, again, that was one of those 50-50 games.
Both of those games we could have won.
They call a 50-50 ball in terms of
the irony is Iowa State was the only game that we truly didn't look good, and Iowa State took it to us, and then Iowa State fell apart after that.
Yep.
And they actually, well farther down the Big 12 standings than we are. And big game this Saturday for the Wildcats basketball, men's basketball team. They took care of Norfolk State, actually turned it into a pretty large blowout.
Uh-huh.
Didn't start that way, but uh-huh. they turned it in. And Norfolk State has a good team. They've been, I think, two out of the last 3 years, Norfolk State's made it to the dance.
Okay.
So it's not a big, Power Five conference school.
Yeah.
But it's a decent team.
Yeah.
And they ended up turning it on. And now we got Auburn coming to town.
Yep. And so, not a neutral site game for once. So, that'll be a barn burner in McHale.
Saturday night at McHale. It should be good and loud.
And Purdue sure looking like they're for real this year. I mean, good Lord, they're the number one team, I guess, right?
Yeah, so they are. They're one or two in most polls.
Looking really strong.
We've touched one in a couple. Yeah. The CBS Sports Daily poll, which does it every day. Last week, after we had our three wins over top 14 teams in the first five games, he said, hey, you take a schedule like that and you win those games, you deserve to be number one.
Sure.
Well, speaking of the city of Tucson, today is a big day in the city of Tucson at 10 o'clock today.
Ice rink opens? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Wishful thinking. At the Tucson Convention Center, it will be the inauguration for three council members. Kevin Dahl being reelected, Miranda Schubert and Selena Barajas, new to their wards, mm-hmm. going to have some new faces. You know, we always kind of talk about once you're in one of those chairs, you never leave.
Like a lurch to
and,
the left.
You know, we've got three of the sitting members of the mayor and council have been over there over 15 years. Yeah. So some new faces coming. I don't think there's any huge surprises in the election, but they'll get to swear in today and officially take their oath. And Mayor Romero will deliver her annual address to Tucsonans. So that will be going on 10 o'clock at the Tucson Convention Center if you want to go down and see what they have to say. But I tell you, they've got their work cut out. Think about the lead.
Yeah, I mean, another bus attack yesterday.
And that's 10 in 5 months.
So
And reviewing that list of those 10 bus-related attacks, you know, either at a transit center, at a bus stop, or on the bus itself. I thought it was missing a couple, and maybe they've been longer than five months ago.
I'll look up the list. If there's any that pop out, I'll...
There's a couple that I thought might have been left off, but maybe they weren't violent enough. But the bottom line is, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
I'm hoping that today I'll hear some good words from the mayor about the RTA next and her support for that. It's I know she's been talking about it at the council and the mayor and council meetings, but we need to have some of the elected leaders start stepping up and really talking about why RTA next is important. Mm-hmm. Is it perfect? No. Is it a good deal? It's a good deal for everybody in this community. We'll get more into that in the months coming, because I'll be definitely bringing on some guests that will focus on that. So a lot going on in the city of Tucson. After the break, though, I'm going to bring up two decisions that the Pima County Board of Supervisors are going to be making in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
That are going to have a large impact, Matt. And I want to get your thoughts and opinions on is this going to be helpful for our community or harmful?
All right.
Based on, are we open for business? So you're listening to The Morning Voice. Stay with us through the break. We appreciate you joining us every day of the week. Five different hosts, five different topics. Morning Voice is your morning drive or your morning cup of coffee. Just tune in to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass. So, Matt, there's a couple issues that I just want to point out. The County Board of Supervisors is also meeting today. I guess they won't be able to attend the city's event because their meeting starts at 9 o'clock. Okay. But in the next two meetings, so the meeting today and then the next meeting on the 16th, they're making a couple decisions that could have a huge impact on both the economy in the region, but also on the appearance to people outside this community on whether Pima County is a good place to come do business. And the first one is they're considering, and today's going to be the public hearing, but my understanding is they're also going to continue that public hearing onto the 16th, because there was a lot of issues, not to mention the fact that the meeting conflicts with another public meeting that some people are going to be attending. And I believe they've still got to do some more research on it. But there's a 7.7 mile stretch of unpaved Santa Rita Road that is the primary source of the road that reaches Copper World.
So this, now I know why you teed this up for me. Sure. Yeah, this is interesting.
So it's a 7.5 mile
dirt road
because of where the road is and the protection that they have for wildlife there, it cannot be a paved road.
Sure.
It has to remain dirt.
Right.
My understanding is Copper World's put almost $1 million into dust mitigation.
There's something that they can put on it that is a dust inhibitor. And the coverage that I saw out of the Green Valley News, or I'm not sure who had the article, but they said basically the town had received very few complaints about it since they put the dust inhibitor down.
All a true statement.
Yeah.
But they're still the county right now is still pushing forward with this potential change.
An ordinance which limits the number of trips that heavy trucks can make and the speed that they can go.
Correct. And it can come down all the way to setting a speed limit no lower than 15 miles an hour, but they can set it all the way down at 15 miles an hour. Yeah. And they can also put weight restrictions on the heaviest a truck can be that's on that road. They can, the ordinance they're looking at does allow them to give permits that exceed the use restrictions, either in number of trips or the weight, because both of those are restricted on this road. Now, in some conversations I've had with a few members of the Board of Supervisors that are proponents for it, they say, well, this is important to keep us from attaining a air quality that would impact our future growth and our future prosperity, much like what Maricopa County is under right now. They have to do certain things with regards to their air quality.
Yes.
If they're going to expand roads, expand use of vehicles. But I think that's got more to do with 4.5 million people that live there now and drive vehicles than the dust from a road, especially this one. And I understand this will apply to all the roads in the county. They're not targeting this road. But if you listen to the opponents to Copper World, it sounds an awful lot like they're targeting this specific road, because they've been fighting it for years. Matter of fact, Pima County wouldn't issue them the air quality permit. HUD Bay had to take Pima County to court. One, and the state now oversees the air quality permit for that development, because they believed Pima County wouldn't give them a fair choice. So my concern for the county is twofold. One, why? I understand your health concerns, but there's been very few complaints made about it. The mitigation's happening on this road. Make an exception for this road. If it's really not about this road, make an exemption for it.
Mm.
Take it out of here. Because to me, it does appear that they are targeting the Santa Rita Road as an example, and that would all but kill Copper World. And what it's really going to happen to do won't kill it, because guess what? They're going to take it back into court, because it looks just like we're describing it, that they are targeting that. They are trying to do anything they can to stop something because they don't agree with it, even if the town of Sarita is fully supportive of Copper World.
This whole ordinance was probably written by the Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. The coverage I read in the Green Valley News said they were the ones that demanded this, not a group of residents that were unhappy. This is an environmental group that has been working nonstop to stop the mine. Okay. If this is safe, they may as well have a parking lot there. They may as well have their own parking space over at the county. Okay. At the county building.
Absolutely.
Park reserved for, you know, our overlord, Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. Okay. So that's what that's all about. Okay. If I'm HUD Bay, I'm building a 7 mile long rail to take me to the nearest pavement, and I'm running that thing 24/7. Okay. So, cause that won't generate dust, and it's not paving it. Okay. So they did say, yeah, we can pave it. That would be a solution. Oh no. No. The wildlife. We got to protect the poor little animals. So because walking across the street is somehow dangerous, more dangerous for them than walking across a dirt road. I don't understand it. I'm not a scientist, nor a biologist, nor an activist. But, you know, the idea is here that Save the Scenic Santa Ritas is doing everything they can to stop the mine, okay? And that's what's going on. That's what the county is responding to. Everything that the county does is in response to them in regards to this. And so you're right. I mean, we'll shout down an AI, whatever, data center. We'll, whatever we're going to do. They were working on the Rosemont side of it in 2006 or 2008. I mean, so this is a long-term project for them, and they're dug in, and, you know, they've got lawyers, and, you know, so they've got the money and the lawyers to fight all this stuff.
HUD Bay has won in court three times against Pima County.
And every official.
Three times.
And I heard Andres Cano here on Bill Buckmaster a few weeks ago. And I always hear this from all these politicians. Oh, I'm not against mining. I'm just against this mine. Or I'm just against this mine. Well, it sounds like you're against mining.
It's kind of saying, as an elected official, oh, we're business friendly. I've never heard an elected, right, somebody running for office say, I'm not business friendly.
They're never going to say that.
But then once they're in the seats, issues like this, and we can go, we will have Hudbe on at some point to talk about this, because there's a ton of reasons for all the movement the activists want towards clean energy, all they want towards electrification, and you have to have copper. And guess what? It's only in the ground where it is.
Yeah.
And it's fine as long as it's not in their backyard.
And you know what? Here's the deal. These guys are pushing, they're fighting prosperity. They're fighting good paying jobs with benefits for people. They're fighting generational wealth building, people that can work a job and send their kids to college. Okay. So, you know, you want to fight prosperity, be my guest. But that's what they're doing.
And the second issue, which we won't talk about today, is by the 16th, they need to make a decision on the data center. And I would like to tell you, I told you, I had a bill lined up for next Tuesday. They're not making any public comments until they get this resolved. So we only know. We can only hope. That will set the table. Are we friendly or not? Come back after the break. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and Matt Neely behind the glass, the one that I know just what buttons to push every once in a while.
That's right.
But it's always a good conversation. One thing that if you're going to be engaged, if you want to get engaged in your community and make a difference, there's a lot of different ways to do it. You can serve your country. You can serve as a member of public safety, police, fire, ambulance, healthcare worker, an educator. There's a ton of ways to do it, but you can do it as a citizen too. And that's by talking with your electeds. Let them know what you think. You know, we talk about your vote being your most sacred right and responsibility in this country. So voting is important, being an educated voter, and don't be afraid to let your elected officials know what you think on an issue. If you don't agree with what Matt and I were just talking about, then call your board of supervisors and tell them what they're going to do. And I challenge you all to see if you really know who your board of supervisor member is. You would be surprised when you start doing polling how low that number turns out. But we're not going to talk about the Board of Supervisors the rest of this morning. I've been joined by Chris King. Thank you for being with me today, Chris.
Good morning, General. How are you?
Greatly appreciate it. We go back a ways once from the time I got started at SLC, and we'll cover all that. But you are active. You actually just said, you know, you are an activist for what you believe in and what you're passionate about.
And that's how I got started. Absolutely. That's how I got started, as an activist. And one of the things that I found about being an activist is you don't necessarily know everything. So you have to sit and continue to learn. And, you know, as you said, we've known each other for years, and you saw me that, but you've also seen that growth.
It's absolutely.
It's not because of I'm going to stay in that one bubble. It's you have to continue to learn.
I can truly see, I've seen you change your position, not only on some issues, mm-hmm. you've got your core fundamental values, which we'll get to. But first I want to give everybody a little background mm-hmm. for the people who don't know Chris King.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I'm a military brat. So I grew up around the world. So most of my life before moving to Arizona was spent in the Midwest. I spent time outside of the country in Korea, in Europe. So then that was, in Europe before I joined the military myself. But once I joined, it was basically off to the races. I've been all around.
So did you have a single high school that you went to, or did you have multiple? Okay. Yeah. with the military life, if your dad or mom was moving around all the time, you weren't quite often, you get to experience multiple high schools.
Exactly. Four high schools in three states and two countries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So you
may not be the record, but you're close, because generally one a year, you know, as military parents, we like to try to keep it one a year, but that's incredible.
Yep. So one high school I went to for 2 years, one high school I went to for 6 weeks.
Wow. So for the whole, for all the background that you had growing up in the military, moving around all around the world.
Right.
How long did it take you to finally decide you wanted to join?
I had started planning on joining. I was, I think, 13 or 14. I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy, and I wanted to fly F-15s, and that didn't work out well for me. So because, you know, moving around and everything else, you couldn't keep grades up.
Oh, yeah.
So it was extremely difficult for me.
People don't realize that is a challenge for a military brat. There's some great things about it, but there's some challenges too. And moving around that often and frequently, especially in high school, that can be tough on you academically as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, at middle school, you know, that's what I wanted to do, you know, middle school. I wanted to be an F-15 driver, you know, because I thought that was the most impressive aircraft. And I still do. I think it's probably the most impressive aircraft that we have. So that and the A-10. So the A-10
You're really going to come on this show and leave the F-16 out of the conversation. Chris, come on, man.
So, you know what?
I'd be lying, though, if I didn't tell you that my first choice on my dream sheet was an F-15, and I got my second choice an F-16. So I'm ecstatic about it because it led to a long career.
It's great. Honestly, it's probably one of the best airframes out there that we have. So next to the B-52, I mean, that thing has got, like, lifespan that's exceeded far. I mean, grandkids are fixing the B-52s that, you know, their grandparents flew.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you and I can talk about the planes all day, but so you joined the...
I joined
the U.S.
Air Force. Yes, sir.
And what did that path look like for you throughout your career?
So I initially joined open electrical. I went in, basically, I was just trying to, you know, start my life. Because I was once I graduated high school, you know, my last year I was in vocational technology. So I was learning to build houses. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to continuously build something, you know, find a way to continue to serve, which that's going to tie into decisions later. But finding a way to continue to serve. So as well as learning something different, you know, having that vocation, that trade. So the Air Force, they made me an electrician. And I was getting ready to get out. You know, at the end of my enlistment, you know, my first term, I was getting ready to get out. I was going to go take a union job, you know, just be an electrician. And then I ran into these guys that I thought were just amazing. These guys, you know, it was right after the Mogadishu incident. So, and there were some guys that I was stationed with. And ran into some EOD guys, and you know, during an exercise, and I was like, these guys had all the coolest gear. These guys were doing all the fun stuff, and I was like, I want to go do that. So that's where it started, you know, getting involved with that. So I changed my mind. I cross trained, and next thing you know, it was 20 plus years later.
And there's a respect for EOD folks in the military because we think, one, you're partly crazy. and two, there's so much you do that people don't understand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's not just about going and finding that bomb that didn't explode and de-army. There's so much that you do in EOD. So how many years did you do that in the Air Force?
So I was in the Air Force active 20 years, 3 months, and 28 days.
Not that you're counting.
No, it's on my DG-14.
But the good thing about it was that's what brought you to Tucson.
It is what brought me to Tucson. It's also what showed me what politics is a little bit about. So, because as an EOD technician, you're detailed out to Secret Service, State Department. You know, you work with every federal law enforcement agency and other agencies out there. So, you know, that's kind of what got me started. I started off, you know, my first RNC, Republican National Convention, was in 2004. It was after I got back from Iraq. So, my wife was still deployed, and I'm in New York City for the RNC. So, then I was like, okay, this is a little bit interesting. So, I see that. You know, 2008, I was getting ready to deploy, so I didn't do any, you know, of that. I mean, a little bit of the details. 2012, RNC, DNC. My last State Department mission was a month before the September 11th incident in Benghazi. So I was actually in Algeria, so detailed to the State Department. So, and I brought a brand new guy with me, and you know, he was a retrainee like I was. So, and this was his first detail, and this was my last detail. So it was kind of a passing on, and I'm outside, you know, talking to my wife on the sat phone, saying, hey, what's going on? And, you know, we're sitting there just talking, and then I hear a gun battle erupt about 6-8 blocks away. So I'm like, hey, let me call you back. So I go in and I ask this young man, I was like, hey, have you ever heard a gunfight go on? And he's like, no. So we go outside and we listen to the gun, and you could see the kind of the that uncertainty, that kind of not necessarily panic, but uncertainty, you know, because this was real. This became very, very real, very, very quickly. And next thing you know, he's like, how far away? And you could see it, that concern. He's like, how far away? I said, probably about 6-8 blocks. And it was automatic gunfire. So, and it was small caliber, intermediate caliber. So 5.56, 7.62. Yeah. And it's going back and forth. Goes on for about an hour. And he goes, are we in any trouble? It's like, no. We should be fine. In the event something happens, you know, they're going to write about us in the paper. It's
turn
be all
to
over.
The experienced, you know, Master Sergeant and say, am I okay? And, yeah. and you go, you're fine. Don't worry about it. When you see me panic, then you know it's not going well.
Yeah.
So you decide to stay in Tucson. Why?
Yes.
I mean, you mentioned your wife was also served in the military.
Yes, my wife's a retired Master Sergeant. My kids were, you know, they graduated from Vail schools. You know, we bought our house in Vail. The Vail School District, so because it was the best school district at the time. So, and it's still top 10, top 5, you know, for the last 20 plus years. So my kids graduated there.
And after that's when you started truly getting engaged with the party.
Yeah, after I retired, because, you know, when you're active duty, you're very, very, you know, not necessarily disconnected, but you're restricted on what you can and cannot do. So you don't go showing up in uniform. You don't go giving your opinions. You can throw a bumper sticker on your car, but that's pretty much the level of the extent to that, your commitment.
That's the safe commitment.
That is the safe
to
commitment.
To keep you out of trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and there's differences, but yeah, you can talk to this as well. There's differences between the amount a person can do and an officer can do.
Yeah.
So
that experience, because like I said, that I just started with SLC. Mm-hmm. You were in party leadership in the Pima County Republican Party. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about politics in your time working in the party?
So, one, we are masters of the circular firing squad. We really, really are. We have no problem eating our own. Instead of actually saying, hey, come over here, let's talk about this, let's just go eat our own and then make it as public as possible. We handle things in the public court of social media instead of actually addressing things behind the, you know, coming into office. Hey, let's have a conversation. And that's one of the things that I was actually trying to do as first vice chair when I was with the party. And part of that was actually, and I didn't want to go any further with party leadership in the county level, even really as much at the state level too, even because I started at the state level too.
Did you have any thoughts of running when you were doing that?
No.
Or were you more about getting the right people elected?
I wanted to get the right people elected, but I also wanted to learn more because I'm a perpetual student. I wanted to continue to learn. I still continue to learn every day. I talk to people from various communities, whether it's the business community, the healthcare community, the public safety community. I talk to everybody. And you know,
you've got a master's degree. You've continued your education.
Two of them. Yeah.
That's right, because you got your second one in master's in education.
Correct.
Right.
So
at the time, and there's a lot of things going on in the party, as there always is.
Yeah,
and at some point, you kind of step back a little bit. But then you decide to run for public office.
Yes, as a school board member.
In the school, in the Vail School District.
Yeah.
What led you to making that decision?
So I was actually talking to, I was talking to several people, right? But it was former Senator Wadsack. She was like, you don't know anything about, you know, being elected official. So I'm like, okay. So I reached out and asked, you know, that was part of it. But on the other part of it, it was my granddaughters. You know, my granddaughters live in a school district that has a lot of failing schools here in the community. So I wanted to have, you know, something to say about them and where they went to school and everything else and ensure that they had the same opportunities to get that high quality education that my kids did. So, and you know, they live, you know, right outside the school district. So they'll just come live with us, you know, to finish high school.
So when we come back from the break, I want to do what we're really here to do. And that's to let you have an opportunity to make your case why you should be the next state senator in LD 17. But before we go, I just want to say your announcement of running was really unique because it came with an endorsement, an announcement from the current sitting senator, Senator Vince Leach,
correct,
that he's not running again and that he has worked with you to run for office. So when we come back from the break, let's talk about why you're making this move and more importantly, what is it you want to accomplish when you get in the state legislature?
Excellent.
All right. That's the voice of Chris King, candidate for state senate in LD 17. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030, The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. With me is Chris King, candidate for LD-17 Senate on the Republican side. So, Chris, we talked a lot about your background.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We mentioned that Vince Leach sought you out, mm-hmm. and you agreed to run for his seat, which will be open next year since he's no longer mm-hmm. going to pursue it. Why?
Why?
Why do you want to be the state senator representing LD-17?
It's about service. It really is. I hadn't planned on running for the Senate. It came about. Senator Leach said, "Hey, would you consider?" And I said, "Absolutely." So a couple years ago, I was looking to run, and my wife actually looked at me and says, "It's not time." So it wasn't time. So this year, it was a different time.
Well done on that decision.
Exactly. And in that time as well, as I said earlier, one, I went back and got a master's in education. So one, I learned more about the educational community in and of itself, as well as the leadership supervision as a school board member, but now from the education side, the academic side as well. And you learn more by going back to school, not necessarily saying that college is needed for everything. I'm the worst substitute teacher ever because I say that not everybody needs to go to college. So the people who run FAFSA don't like me necessarily because not everybody does need to go to college. I didn't go to college initially.
I think there's truth, and I think we're finding more and more about it. Mm-hmm. You got your technical education through the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it now through community colleges. You don't.
Absolutely.
Different paths for different people work.
Absolutely.
So somebody listening to us goes, okay, this is a big education guy. Mm-hmm. What are your core fundamental principles that you want to ensure and protect at the state legislature?
Well, one is one of the areas that I'm looking at, one is education, right? Two is public safety and veterans affairs. Those are huge issues to me because, one, my dad's a retired cop, okay? So my dad's a retired cop. I've volunteered here in various forms and capacities with various public safety entities. Veterans affairs, I've been involved with veterans affairs issues for years here as well. So those things are all three of those things are going to be big for me as well. We have a huge issue right now with business development, right? And we need to make sure that businesses, small businesses, because they are the backbone of our society, right? There are more small businesses than there are large businesses. So we need to make sure that they're protected. And the way we do that is through not over-regulating them, right? Make sure that they actually have the ability to do that. And the way they have that is keeping government out of their hair, not over-regulating them, putting the thumb on the scales.
Yeah, there's a lot of belief that if you limit the regulations and the guidance, we've got the ability for business to better serve the people they're trying to create. It's going to mm-hmm. cost less money. They can potentially pay more mm-hmm. to their employees and give you a better price
mm-hmm.
if they're selling goods or services.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the way out. So what's your take? What do you believe at the state legislature you can do to help public safety? We know we've got public safety issues here, and part of it's Manning,
right?
But there's also part of it, there's some rub maybe coming off that as a profession because mm-hmm. of the lack of support from the
right.
community.
And part of that is when we have to change culture in society. Right, because it used to be public safety officials, they were people that were looked up to. Well, we've got a lot of people who don't look up to it as a profession. Talking with some of the agencies out there, DPS is in really, really bad shape. If you're outside of the Phoenix or the Tucson area and you get into an accident at night, you may be waiting a while before you get help, right? Yeah, I mean, very long time, because they have to call that DPS officer, he has to get up, he has to get dressed, he has to jump in his patrol unit and get there.
Well, when you think about it, the DPS officer is better served in a high populated area mm-hmm. for more likelihood of incidents, but Arizona's huge.
Absolutely.
It's a big state.
It is.
Okay, so you were still, tell me about LD-17. Obviously that was redrawn in the last mm-hmm. district. It wraps all the way from Marana and Red Rock area,
yep.
all the way to Vail.
Absolutely.
Two different communities.
Absolutely.
How well do you understand LD-17?
So in and of itself, there's right around 179,000voters. It's split out roughly a third, a third, a third. It's actually a little bit more, right around a 10% Republican advantage.
Yep.
So
that's grown. When it was originally drawn, I think it was about 7. It's now gone up to about 10, but that's kind of been a movement lately,
right?
Of more people are registering as Republicans.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there are like 3, maybe 4 major population areas. You got the Vail area, the Tanque Verde area. Then you got the Marana, Picture Rocks, Oro Valley, that area there, and then you got the Saddlebrook area up in Pinal County. So it is a very, very diverse area, but there's a lot of commonality in it too. So it's a very highly educated area. It's a very high, very affluent area. So the median income is right around $97,000. Okay. So there's a very large difference, you know, but there's little pockets of things, and you have to be out there talking to them.
I think you bring something unique in that, one, you got an endorsement from somebody who's from the Saddlebrook area, mm-hmm. and has represented Oro Valley Marana for over almost 12 years. Mm-hmm. And you personally are from the Vail area, so mm-hmm. so you bring both that in. How can people help out? How can they find you and for more information on you? And are you still looking for signatures?
Absolutely, still looking for signatures. You can go online to my website, chriskingforaz.com, and that's Chris King, ForAZ.com. You can sign there. You can donate there. We're going to be out and about, you know, all the way through the filing deadline and collecting signatures. So if you haven't signed the petition, I'd love to have your signature.
Please go and sign his petition. Anybody who's willing to put themselves out in front and serve deserves to have the opportunity to do so. So sign his petition as minimum. You can learn more about him again, chrisking4az.com. Chris, thanks for joining me. I guarantee we're going to have you back because it's still 11 months away from election day.
It is. Thank you, General.
Thanks, sir. Mm-hmm. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass. And I say Matt and I are extremely honored to be joined by the Bill Buckmaster this morning. Bill, thank you for showing up. I know you're not used to being in the studio this early.
No, I misinterpreted how much traffic is out there at this hour of the morning. Left at 7:30. Normally, it takes me about 20 minutes to get here, and I did get here just in the nick of time. And I'm so delighted that you invited me. I'm really honored to come down here and be on your show. You're doing such a great job, General. Really terrific.
Well, I appreciate it, Bill. The opportunity to be on your show, watch you work, listen to your show. You're one of the mentors that I consider.
Thank you.
Who has helped me out making this transition to side. Now, the best part about this is I'm on the other side this
That's
time.
That's it.
And you're over there, and we're going to spend the next 4 segments talking about Bill Buckmaster.
Well,
and your life and your career.
It's been quite a ride, and there's still another chapter to go, at least, I hope.
Oh, I know you've got more planned.
I do.
But for us here at KVY, you've been such a mainstay. But you've been a mainstay in Tucson, you know, over 3 decades, about 37 years.
37.
And then before that, multiple.
Probably another 20 before that, 1967. My hometown is Chicago. I was back for the summer from the University of Arizona, and my father was a prominent figure in Chicago, and he said, you know, can I help you get some kind of a summer gig? And I said, no, Dad, I want to do this on my own. So I started showing up, knocking on doors at radio stations, and boy, did I hit the jackpot with Westinghouse Broadcasting Company. At the time, was a big deal.
So you grew up in Chicago?
I did. I grew up on the North Shore of Chicago, a very affluent area. I had a very privileged background on the North Shore of Chicago. Went to probably, at the time, certainly was considered the a high school in the top 5 in the country, New Trier High School in Winnetka, Illinois, and was very fortunate. And I started knocking on doors and was fortunate enough to land an internship in 1960, summer of 67, at WIND, Wind Radio, in Chicago. And Westinghouse just had so many legacy stations, KDKA Pittsburgh, one of the first stations in the United States, WBZ Boston, KFWB in Los Angeles, and WINS, WINS New York, which kind of was the first all-news station. And they patented that, give us 20 minutes, we'll give you the world. So it was fun for me just kind of hanging out, and it was a troubled time. In the summer of 67, and yeah. I would go out with the news department wearing a hard hat because things got a little tense in Chicago at that time. But for a kid, I don't know, I must have been about 17 years old. It was very exciting for me.
So did you always know, when did you first know you wanted to get into
broadcasting?
Media,
broadcasting. Well, I used to throw the ball against the wall, the brick garage there in Wilmette, Illinois, had to be a certain ball that would kind of give you a nice bounce off that brick. And I would pretend I was the announcer for the Chicago Cubs. And then when basketball season rolled around, I would pretend I was the basketball announcer for whatever. When football season rolled around, I would pretend I was a football announcer. And our front lawn had a series of very large walnut trees, and I used to pretend that each tree was a first down. But I was imagining all this stuff and kind of an imaginary announcer for teams and things.
So you grew up thinking sports announcing, sports media.
I was kind of thinking that way, yeah.
But then you got an internship with a news company.
Yeah, news. And at one point, I really wanted to be a disc jockey. I loved music. I still love music. Know a lot about 60s music. And at one point in my career, I was actually doing DJ work for 9 months at a shortwave radio station, of all things, in San Francisco, KGEI, which stood for General Electric International. And they were out on the Salt Flats in Belmont, California, just south of San Francisco. It was a very famous radio station because that was the station during World War II that General MacArthur broadcast to the Philippines that he shall return. And so it was real. It was just like a dream come true. Here was this, I don't know how much power they would have, but you would see a whole wall on the transmitters. And it would light up all these tubes. And here I was, you know, broadcasting. I did one little show, a little, called myself Bill Stewart. It's the only time in nearly 60-year career that I haven't used my full name. Stewart's my middle name. So I was Bill Stewart. And I was broadcasting this radio show playing contemporary music, and I would get letters from inmates in jails in Central America. Hey, Bill Stewart, would you play something for me next Sunday night? I'm down here on a drug charge or something, and was listening on a shortwave radio. But it was just another piece to just an incredible ride that I'm so fortunate, kind of being at the right place at the right time in my life.
Well, there's no doubt you've seen the evolution so far of radio and of the media. We'll touch on that too. But you were in the Bay Area, I believe. Yeah. It was after you'd been introduced to Tucson. So what's your story about why Tucson?
Well, boy, it's actually kind of a funny story and embarrassing in a way. I had been accepted to several fine universities coming out of New Trier High School. And Northwestern, my dad was an alum there and served on the alum board. And it was just assumed I would be going to Evanston. And he was a star athlete in the 1930s, by the way, a track star. And I thought that was the path. And then a relative was the president at the University of Wisconsin, named Conrad Elvium. Several buildings, including the museum there at Madison, are named after him. So it was either Northwestern or Wisconsin. But then my parents were going through a divorce, and I figured I really need to get out of the Midwest. So Playboy magazine ranked these top 10 party
schools.
Okay,
here we go.
Yeah, this is a true story. And it said the University of Arizona was like this great party school, and everybody had a great time. And I thought, you know, I just want to get away. I had come out here in maybe 1963 to visit some older kids from high school, and they showed me a really good time here in Tucson. And the first time I'd ever seen the Catalinas or been out west, and I really fell in love with it. And I told my dad, Dad, I'm going to go out to Tucson, the University of Arizona. He said, you're going to do what?
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to Arizona. He said, oh, well, that's going to save me a ton of money.
Well, because, at least he took it well.
I know, because the tuition was so outrageously low in 1965 in Tucson. And when I came out here, it was just like a different world for me. But I fell in love with this area. It took a little while.
Right.
But
well,
initially,
it's different. There's
no
snow.
I missed the autumn, you know, and the autumn leaves. In October, and I had a girlfriend at Northwestern, and I took advantage of that American Airlines student fare and would take the red eye out of TIA on Friday nights to go back and take part in her social activities at Northwestern. I would do that almost at least a couple of times a month.
So what changed? I mean, what changed? Because that sounds like a path towards, I'm going to be out of here pretty quick and go back to...
I thought I was going to transfer, and I was accepted to transfer in the spring of 1967, but I met my wife, my girlfriend, met Anne.
You're saying you met your other girlfriend?
Yeah, my other girlfriend.
Because you had one back
I had one
at Northwestern.
New Trier, and she went on to at Northwestern. By the way, she married the quarterback of the Northwestern football team. But anyway, but this was someone that I met in a radio and TV class, of all things, over in a place called Herring Hall on the University of Arizona campus, which everybody thinks of Old Main being the oldest building. Not true. It's actually a place called Herring Hall. That's where they had the kind of the TV station there, the early stages of PBS and national broadcasting. But anyway, I was learning about television, and our friend Jim Arnold, that's where I first met Jim, Sonny Jim Arnold, in a radio and TV class, in that class. And I also met the young lady who would, 5 years later, become my wife of 51 years. So that changed things.
That did.
And I told her early, by the way, one of our second date was seeing the Doors at High Corbett Field.
That you saw the Doors?
Saw
live?
The Doors.
Okay, I'm
live.
Jealous.
Oh, yeah.
I am now really jealous.
It just released Light My Fire. Anyway, I told, I said to Anne, you know, I've been accepted back at Northwestern. And she said, go. It's a great opportunity. Well, that's all it took. Of course, I stayed.
You stayed. Yeah.
I stayed. Yeah.
No, I'm not going anywhere now.
I didn't. I stayed, and I'm glad I did. I got a great education, and later went on to get my master's degree. A lot of people don't understand or realize, or maybe have heard, that I do have a master's degree in education, of all things,
right,
from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. But that's another chapter, my time in Las Vegas.
So we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Look at you setting me up with a good
table.
Hook.
Set the hook.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee you 51 years of marriage.
Yeah.
Congratulations
Thank
on that.
You.
That is,
Thank you very
that
much.
Is truly impressive.
Yeah.
And it shows that your decision to stay at the University of Arizona was good.
It was.
For you.
It was.
And it was good for our community, because eventually that might have helped bring you back. And we'll get to that
did,
when
yeah.
we come back.
Thanks.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. That is the voice, if you don't recognize it, shame on you, of Bill Buckmaster. And he will be with us for the remainder of the hour. So stay and listen to the stories. You never know what you're going to learn about Bill Stewart today. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, Matt Neely behind the glass, and Bill Buckmaster sitting across the table from me on the receiving end of the microphone on this one. Bill, those were some incredible stories already.
How it all started, right?
And we've only gotten you through college.
No.
I know. We've only gotten you through college, but we were talking a little bit about what comes next, and I was just kind of surprised by it. So what did you do right after college?
Oh, well, right after college, I went to work up in Phoenix. My then, before she was my wife, Anne, my girlfriend, was up in Phoenix, so I went up there and looked all over the place, found a job actually part-time writing advertising copy, doing tire ads for the weatherman on Channel 12 in Phoenix. Anyway, but that was kind of a part-time gig. And then I landed a really nice job for a 21-year-old kid. I became the editor of two monthly trade magazines. One of them was Arizona Architecture, and then the other one was Arizona New Mexico Contractor Engineer, which encompassed going to road jobs all over Arizona and New Mexico. And I had an MGB at the time. Imagine trying to drive to a road job in an MGB. So I'd find the trailer where the superintendent was, park my little MGB, and then the soup, as they call them, the superintendent would take me out onto the road jobs, and I would shoot photographs and write stories about these different projects. And my fiance and I were just in New Mexico for a week. And it kind of was like old home week for me because I covered so much of that beautiful state and Arizona as well. But I was covering things like the new interchange of I-10 in El Paso. I mean,
hey, interchanges are important, Bill. Know, don't forget that.
I know, but it was just when I look back and work up in Flagstaff on the interchange with what was the old, well, I-40 and the interchange coming up from Phoenix, that was all happening in 1969, 70. But it was really interesting. I enjoyed my time. I had five employees, and I was the editor, and I was able to utilize my photography skills because that has always, early on, I thought I might even be, go into professional photography. I was lucky enough to have train under a guy who was a Time Life photographer named George Q, K-E-W, here in Tucson. He was teaching at the University of Arizona. He took me under his wing. He actually sold me his camera, his Leicaflex, which I used on my work as the magazine editor. So my career, I've gone in many kind of many different branches, but it's all been under the umbrella of communication and media.
So you've done print. That's the part I didn't
know.
Then
I worked for the Associated Press.
Okay.
I spent 8 months in Sierra Vista early on in 1972 at the little radio station down there. It was called KHFH, which stood for Historic Fort Huachuca. And then I did a morning show, a noon news, a 5 o'clock radio news. And then after that, if it's as if it wasn't enough, I went over to the cable station and did a cable TV show from 6:30 to 7. Now, that's something, Ted, you could only do when you're like 22 years old.
Well, you've kept a pretty big pace. Now, cable TV, what year was that
It was 1972.
So it was just fresh.
Just fresh. Yeah.
So that's incredible.
Plus, we had just married, that was May of 72, and we wound up down there in Sierra Vista, had absolutely no furniture, found a little, there was a new quadplex that had been built right by the Sierra Vista Hospital. I don't know if there's a new, I haven't been down there, unfortunately, in a long time, but this was right by the hospital. We had no furniture, so the landlady said, one of the guys from the power company has one of these giant wooden spool tables. That became our dining room, living room table.
So literally the spool.
That's where we had Thanksgiving.
That was Thanksgiving dinner
on that table in November of 1972. But anyway, I did a lot of stringing. In other words, sending stories up to Phoenix of the Associated Press. Very colorful stuff going on at Bisbee and Tombstone, and the bureau chief came down. He said, you know, Bill, you're supplying us with such terrific stories. How would you feel about coming up to Phoenix and taking over the radio and TV wire? And I said, we're gone. We're out of Sierra Vista.
Yeah.
And then I went up to Phoenix. That was 73. 1973. Then I went, but I wanted to get back into broadcasting. An opportunity came to work in the San Joaquin Valley, a really pretty town. I don't know if you've been there, Visalia, California, in Tulare County. And that was fun. Worked as the news director there, and a lot was going on with Cesar Chavez that summer. And the farm, again, being at the right place at the right time, I covered that. And then spent a little time there in Visalia, and then an opportunity came up to be the news, not the news director, but the assistant news director in Las Vegas. And that really changed everything for my career.
So you're in Las Vegas. Las Vegas is booming in the 70s.
23 or 4 years old in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas was going from being the mob town to the family-friendly town. And if you want to know what it was like, take a look at the movie Casino with Robert De Niro, and that mirrors my time in Las Vegas. Bodies were turning up all over the place in the desert. It was really a great time to be a young reporter. And a lot of people think Ted Turner was the original founder of a news, all news operation. Not true. NBC had something called News and Information, and we were the station I was at was the NBC affiliate, and we became kind of a charter member of this news and 24-hour news cycle, and the machine had to be constantly fed. So I was feeding stories. I was working 7 days a week, not only covering news, covered 2 Muhammad Ali heavyweight championship fights.
So you were both in front of the camera? And
no, not in front. This is all radio still.
Oh, still radio.
In
okay.
Las Vegas. But I was doing not only news, but I was doing sports. A lot of the sporting events. Jimmy Connors played some of those tennis, huge purse-type championship matches, and I was ringside for NBC Radio the night that Leon Sphinx upset Muhammad Ali in February of 1978.
Hey, guys, we got a quick caller. Marty, and I think you'll appreciate this one, Bill. Marty has a quick story about Bill's early days.
Yeah, I was police officer in Sierra Vista in those early days. And I remember Bill coming in the early morning hours morning to look at the police blotter so he could report on what happened.
Wow. What is your name, Marty?
Martin Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S.
Boy, I do remember that. I'd drive my little MGB over there, and we'd take a look at what's been going on. If I found something interesting, I'd do a story on it. Wow, that is so cool.
I remember you, Bill.
Wow, and, thank you so much.
Yeah, you used to come in there every morning and find out what was going on in the community.
Yep. I had a good time, actually, in Sierra Vista. I enjoyed it. Thank you very much, Marty. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for the call, Marty.
Marty, that's great. It's amazing sometimes in life you don't know the impact you're going to have or the memories you're going to that are going to come up and be brought to your attention.
Wow.
So this is fun.
I'm
sure this will not be the last radio show you're on. There's probably people lining up. We are very grateful to be the first. It's appropriate to have it at KVOI.
Thank you.
And we haven't gotten out of Las Vegas yet, but
there's a lot to talk about in Las Vegas.
All right. So there's the hook.
All right.
Bill Buckmaster, appreciate your time here. Appreciate all you've given to this community. You're going to be missed. But we've got another half hour with you.
Thank you.
On 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We will be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. With me is Bill Buckmaster of the infamous Buckmaster Show. But we'll get to that. First, we've got to go back to Las Vegas. We were talking real quick. It's all about the relationships and the personalities and the people you meet.
Yeah.
So what were your experiences in Las Vegas, and what were some of the stories and some of the things that you learned the most from?
Well, I didn't really know a lot about Las Vegas other than I'd been there a couple of times and knew it was just the bright lights and, you know, Las Vegas, where gambling was pretty much, that was it in the United States. That turned out to be one of the stories when I was there in the 70s, the ongoing story about Atlantic City. Oh my gosh, what's it going to do to our gaming industry? But I did get an opportunity, a guy by the name of Daryl Dreyer, who was, I think Daryl was like the assistant majority leader at the Nevada legislature. So Daryl would, he'd leave, he was the news director at KORK, Cork, the NBC affiliate, which had in the morning the most incredible ratings. One out of three people in the entire city. I later learned people like Wayne Newton were listening to me after he'd on his way home from doing shows. I know, but it was it was incredible. I was the news guy, and there was a host called Red McElvain who'd been an institution in our business, and I learned so much. I'm just this kid. But anyway, Daryl Dreyer hired me because Daryl had to go up to Carson City, the legislature, for 4 months every year. So I took over as the news director when he was gone, and I was the morning news guy, and then Daryl decided he was going to retire, so I became the news director, and I built a really incredible team. I hired a young man just out of high school. His name was Steve Herman. He went on to become Voice of America correspondent, covered Donald Trump in the first term. Donald Trump's not real happy with my friend Steve Herman. and then there was another young lady I hired from Savannah, Georgia. Her name was Jackie Glass. She went on to become a judge, and she was the judge that put OJ away and sent him to prison. For the last time. So
it's all about the connections, Bill. Oh man, it's all about the connections.
These were kids I hired. They were terrific. But we had a terrific news department contributing to NBC Radio all the time. We were driving into town, my wife and I, in Labor Day weekend of 1973, and there's this horrendous storm. And I wasn't even really, had not even started at the radio station, but there was a disaster at a place called Nelson's Landing, and numerous deaths were reported. So I got on the phone with NBC, and that was the lead story on the radio news for a couple of hours anyway. But I wasn't even officially working there at the station, and I was already filing stories for NBC. But what I did in Las Vegas earned me a Nevada Broadcast Hall of Fame award.
Absolutely.
And I'm very proud of that because you're not eligible unless you've been in the place at least 5 years, and I qualified, I think, 5 years and a couple of months. But that was a terrific honor for me, coming on the heels of the Arizona Broadcast Hall of Fame award. I mean, these, just really happy with it, the way that worked out.
Well, think about that opening story. You weren't even really an employee yet.
No, I wasn't.
I hadn't even taken a job. You pulled off the road.
Got on with NBC.
Found a phone.
No, I was found out what was going on, and then talked to the desk in New York. And oddly enough, the guy who took the tape, as we took the stories, was a guy I later worked with at Arizona Public Media, Peter Michaels. So it's all about connections, isn't it, Ted? In the end,
it is. That has so much to do with it.
Yeah.
And obviously, the honor of being in the Nevada Hall of Fame, mm-hmm, recognized not only your ability on air,
right,
but your ability to lead and put together a team. Because you've talked several times already about your team.
Oh, the team was terrific.
So I know you went to the Bay Area.
Yeah.
I'll let you save that for another one of
right,
your whirlwinds.
Right.
Because I really want to get back to everything up to this point. It had pretty much been radio.
Yeah, it had pretty much been radio. And so then I went to a friend of mine from our sister station in Reno, had taken a job at an all-news station in San Jose. And he says, Bill, why don't you leave Las Vegas, come up and be my morning man. You can call wherever you want, every day, anywhere in the world. So I took that job, and one of the interviews I did, one of the first interviews, and I was one of the first people to talk with the leader who was holding the Americans in Tehran during the Iranian hostage crisis.
You talked to him on the phone.
And I don't know, maybe we talked for 20 minutes. I was trying to figure out, you know, what's going on? Why are you holding these Americans? What is it going to take to release them? But this was all live. KXRX in San Jose. And then that was fun. That was a great gig because I call anywhere in the world.
I got to ask.
Yeah.
How do you get the phone number for the leader of a Islamic movement in Tehran and then actually get him to answer the phone?
Oh, man, that took... I don't know. We talked to some people that that the news director knew that worked for the State Department, and we pulled some strings. But it did happen, and I was great. I mean, like Christmas Eve, we called all over the world. What are you doing in Nairobi at the Norfolk Hotel for this Christmas Eve? The phone bill must have been just horrendous. But anyway, that came to a close when the radio station changed formats. After we had moved to the Bay Area, right, 9 months later, I'm out of a job. It's really the only time I was out of a job, and that was only for 2 weeks. And that's how I transitioned into TV. One of the San Francisco stations was looking for somebody to do the morning business report, and I did that. And I had to get up, like, really early to do that morning show. But it put me on TV. Then I went from San Francisco to San Jose, KICU, which was starting up a major news department, and that was a terrific run that we had in San Jose because so much was happening. Downtown was complete revitalization, bringing in the streetcar. They got a professional team, which was a game changer. The Sharks, the National Hockey League team franchise.
Now you're talking.
So things really starting to change, and of course, what about Silicon Valley? Happening at the same time I was there with Jobs and Wozniak and the whole deal.
I'd say a lot of your timing very good.
It's just been incredible.
You had a lot of foresight.
Right place
on where
right
you
time.
Wanted to be.
Right place at the right time. So
what brought you back to Arizona?
Well, my sister-in-law had heard that Channel 6, KUAT TV, now known as Arizona Public Media, had let their anchor man go, a guy by the name of George Bauer. And so my sister-in-law said, you guys, you know, you went to the U of A, you liked Tucson back in the 60s, and we thought, yeah, maybe we'll make that switch. My friends in the Bay Area, they couldn't believe it. You're going where? Tucson, Arizona? I said, yeah, there's some, you know, things that money isn't all that important. There's more things than money. And so I talked to the executive producer, who has now become my very best friend, Hector Gonzalez. And Hector, first he says, I can't afford some Bay Area television anchorman to come down here to Tucson. I said, let's not even talk money. Let's just keep in touch here. And we kept in touch. And after a few months, he said, why don't you come down? It was over Thanksgiving, November of 87, and we sealed the deal, and I started the first week of January in 1988. One of my first guests was then Governor Evan Meekum. Evan Meekum walks
was
in
he in trouble yet?
He was in trouble, and I wasn't really up to speed yet on what was going on here, but I quickly... I'm a fast learner, and we had a great interview on Channel 6, and that was the beginning of 22 years on a program I was so proud of. Arizona Illustrated in those days was a live nightly program, and...
you remember what time slot it ran?
It was 6:30 to 7.
6:30 to 7.
Monday through Friday, and a quick little aside, I broke my arm up in Alaska in 2021, and I go into the emergency room at the little town in Seward, Alaska, and the doctor says, I can't believe it. You're Bill Buckmaster. I grew up, went to Sal Point, grew up with my parents with TV trays, watching, having dinner, watching you on Arizona Illustrated. Now you're in my emergency room in Seward, Alaska.
You just never know.
You never know. It's all about connections, isn't it?
There's no doubt. We've talked about that a couple times. So when we come back from the break, Bill, we will go into our last segment. There's a lot to cover, mm-hmm. but I want to get your something about your lesson learned.
Yes.
And why you decided then to go
right
back
to come back
to radio.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. That's the voice of Bill Buckmaster, our guest today on The Morning Voice. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass, and he's definitely working to keep me on time, on target on this one because this interview's too good to let go. So I've got Bill Buckmaster with me, the host of The Buckmaster Show, and he's actually going to even be a little more famous, if that's possible, because on the 16th of December, the county's going to provide you a proclamation.
It's almost embarrassing. I mean, I'm really thankful for it, but there's going to be a Bill Buckmaster Day. This really came out of the blue. I had no idea, but we're going to be there at 9 a.m. With the Board of Supervisors on my birthday, December 16th, and they will read this proclamation, which in effect says they, you know, thanking me for my years of service, 37 years here in the media, and then they're going to proclaim Bill Buckmaster Day on December the 30th, which is my last day of the radio show. So then I can proclaim that everybody gets the day off.
That's the plan, except you, Bill. You've got one more show
to do.
I know,
one more show. One more show. So that's 4 weeks from today, so I can have a lot of fun still in 4 weeks. That's for sure.
So 22 years.
Yeah, 22 years.
Emmy nominations.
Yeah, 5 Emmy nominations at Channel 6.
AZPM at Channel 6.
KUAT.
What's your biggest takeaway from your time there?
I was just so proud of the team that I built there. Again, I like to build teams. I'm a team guy. We were live 6:30 to 7, Monday through Friday, and we had an arts reporter, Sue Young Lee, who was terrific. We had Ted Robbins that we hired from Channel 4, and Ted went on to work for NPR. We had Peggy Johnson. I knew her originally as Peggy Giddings. Peggy, of course, over at The Loft. She's done terrific things over there. She was our political reporter. It was just a great team, and we were so relevant in this community. And there was a change in leadership at AZPM, and I felt, you know, I stayed with the change for about 5 years, but then I thought, nah, it's not really going the direction I want. And so I decided I would be my own boss, started Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, the owner of the radio show. And then I just decided this way I could kind of use my brand to do the radio.
Well, that's smart, because your brand was definitely had some swag behind it. Mm-hmm. Not only did you get two states, Arizona and Nevada's Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. You also were awarded a Gold Mic Award from mm-hmm. the Tucson chapter of the American Advertising Federation for your time at KVOA. And little known fact, you had an asteroid named after you by comet hunter and author David Levy.
David Levy, that was terrific. And David tells me at the time, I don't know if there's maybe any other broadcaster, but only Walter Cronkite had an asteroid named after him. So, just another great honor, and just been lucky.
So then the Buckmaster Show.
Yeah, did the Buckmaster
the
Show.
The Buckmaster Show, came. Did it come to KVOI?
Not originally. A friend of mine, John C. Scott,
yep.
the late John C. Scott,
another famous voice.
Occasionally a guest on my Friday roundtable on the TV show. I told John, I said, John, I'm thinking about making a change. He says, why don't you come over? He was over at a station called The Jolt, and went over there, and that didn't last. But I do thank John for kind of shepherding me the change from the TV to the radio. But that station kind of went away after a few months. So I went over and talked here to Doug Martin, the then owner at KVOI, and the rest is history. I really have enjoyed my time here. Bustos Media, they've been very kind to me, and I'm really indebted to a lot of people here.
Well, there's no doubt you left your mark here as well. There's so many folks that have either learned from you, who work with you in this trade. You passed it on. Like you said, just because it was your own show, you didn't stop building a team.
No.
You still were about the teams.
Yeah.
When you came back, and now you were your own show, your own brand.
Yeah.
Anything different? Or did you just do what you'd learned to do?
I just had done what I've always done. I try to be kind, and people say that doesn't seem to work with how could a news person be kind? But I've always felt I've tried to honor the people I'm interviewing in that they have a story to tell, and it's not my job to judge them. I let the listener, the viewer, that's always been kind of what I'm about. I'm not a combative interviewer, but I get just as much or more information from people by being nice and still asking good questions.
But the key, I think, is you're always prepared.
I am always prepared.
Jim Ninsel and others did an article on you in the Tucson Sentinel.
Yes.
And all the different people, from the elected officials to all, they said the same thing. You treated everybody with respect, and therefore they were willing to talk to you and open up.
That's the way it's always been. And that's kind of the way I'd like to be remembered, somebody that really was on top of my game. And I'm not going to be on doing a daily radio show, but I'm still going to be here. I'm going to have a new venture that I'm launching, working with Tucson Airport. One of my clients will be doing something called TUS Talks on their website, a monthly interview series. But it's a new chapter, and there'll be some travel in the new chapter, some community service, and some work.
I'm sure your fiance Darlene has been a good part of saying, "Hey, let's get more time." You've got about 1 minute.
Okay.
Why stop? Why now?
Darlene and I had a wonderful trip over in Idaho, Sun Valley. Then we went up to Whistler in Canada, and you know, that's when I knew that it was time for me to stop, because I did not miss the day to day. I mean, I didn't even check the website, the news, what's going on at home. And I knew, I think this is the time, and I'm turning 78 on December 16th, and I think it's time.
Well, you're still mentally sharp. I mean, think of all the names you recalled from today.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going way back.
I didn't miss anything, I hope.
You have a lot to look forward to. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the opportunity to host and sit in for you.
Thank you
on the
very
Buck
much
Master
for
show.
Doing that.
And I appreciate all the conversations we've had about this industry.
Oh, thank you so much.
Because you continue to build an incredible team around
you. I really
appreciate
your friendship. Thank you, Ted.
And I hope you enjoy the next
chapter.
28 days.
Okay.
I know you'll enjoy the next chapter.
Oh, I know. The next four weeks.
4 weeks. Take these 4 weeks. Soak it all in.
I will.
And I know you'll do the great
thing. And I'll see everybody at noon.
That sounds good, Bill.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. That's Bill Buckmaster, Matt Neely. Thank you. Great job today. Tune in with Grant Kruger tomorrow and stay around for Win Tucson with Kathleen Wynn right after this on 1030 The Voice.